Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Spaced Out, hosted by Bob Bosler. But first, a very quick tale of Marvel's Hercules. This is from Journey into Mystery with Thor, King Size Annual, no special King Size Annual, number one. Thor finds himself in the Olympian realms after fighting with storm giants near a long-lost portal to Olympus. Shortly thereafter, he meets Hercules, and they fight over who is more worthy to cross a stream bridge. This epic battle is stopped by Zeus, who insists that they shake hands and part friends. He then sends Thor back and buries the portal under a mountain. Thor decides not to trust Loki with an account of what happens or tip him off to the existence of the portal, which is, all in all, I believe, a very wise thing. And now, without further ado, Bob Vossler. Greetings and welcome, Bob. How are you?
Doing good. Glad to be here, and here we are in September already.
Yes, we are. The year has zoomed by so quickly.
At least we're getting some nice cooler air, and I think it was a good summer, but I am definitely ready for fall.
Your guest is here, I believe.
Great.
I'm here.
All right, Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Ryan D. Moore, the writer and producer, involved with Marijuana Minutes, a new movie that that he's going to talk about. And I got to say, I was just watching it and laughing. And, you know, I know there's probably a lot of stories behind this. And I also know we have a mutual friend.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So tell me how this project all came together.
Sure, sure. And I'm glad you were laughing. That's always good to hear. I've been a filmmaker for a long while. I've worked on a lot of short films. I've worked on some pilots. And then I was, you know, working as a day player on some TV shows and some features around New York. But I always wanted to make a feature of my own. It was always a goal. And I had written a bunch. And like many artists, I thought they were all terrible. And I kept throwing scripts out. And then I wrote this one. And I thought, oh, this one's not terrible. Maybe I'll make this one. And I showed it to some friends. And they said, hey, this is fun. This is funny. We want to help you make it. And that thus started the journey of making the movie.
And it definitely feels, you know, I definitely am a different generation here, but I can still appreciate the youth spirit of it and what was going on. Did you get any particular inspiration from you sound pretty young yourself, so, but did you get any particular inspiration or examples from some people to create the characters?
Sure. I'm 32, so I think that's still considered young, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
I teach high schoolers.
That's young.
I teach high schoolers, so I don't feel young anymore because they're always telling me how old I am.
I
think most writers write what they know, and I think for the most part my characters are kind of a Frankenstein of different people that I know and parts of personalities that I like, some that I don't like, and I mush them together into characters. But as far as like inspirations for my style go, I'm very into visual jokes. I think that's something that's missing from a lot of films. So it was something that I was very passionate about, making sure that that was in the film, was having a lot of visual humor on screen. Some of my favorite movies are Airplane. I love Young Frankenstein. I love Wet Hot American Summer. I love The Jerk. So that kind of goofball humor lots of physicality. I like all that stuff.
Yeah, we really haven't seen a lot of that, you know, like, I don't want to say coming of age movies, but, you know, the youth-oriented movies. I think Jennifer Lawrence has just done, you know, something that could be compared to what we used to see in the 80s and 90s. Like that. So it was refreshing to see something like kind of a throwback to that and something that shouldn't have gone away. Where did you film it?
Mm-hmm. I live in New Jersey. We filmed, I would say, 90% of it in Monmouth County.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're watching the movie closely, you'll see the Clerks quick stop. Has a little cameo.
Yep, I saw that.
And one of the other producers, his parents live right down the road from there, so we shot a lot of it at their house because they have a nice little bay beach. So all the beach scenes are on the bay over there. But yeah, mostly Red Bank, Middletown, Atlantic Highlands, Highlands. Then we shot one scene in Montclair. And we shot one scene in New York.
Oh, okay. Well, how long did it take to, you know, assemble your cast and what were some of the other things involved in bringing this all together? This is your independent film.
Yeah, it's you know, myself and the other producers all wore many, many hats, and we called out many, many favors from many, many friends. So it was really a labor of love for sure. Everybody pitched in and helped out. But for casting, a lot of the characters I had kind of written with someone in mind already, because if you've ever made an indie film, you know that an actor dropping out can completely ruin a film. So
yeah,
I tried to cast at least the major roles with people I knew were talented and would stick with it and, really, really wanted to be a part of it because I've worked with fair weather actors before and it can really hurt a project. So, a lot of the principal characters were kind of written for their roles.
Very cool. Now, with New Jersey having legalized marijuana within the last, I think it's 2 years now, and I think Neptune was the first in the Jersey Shore to actually have a dispensary. Did you happen, did you encounter any kind of, criticism or challenges with the feeling around? I mean, now it actually maybe less so because it had been legalized.
Not really. Not a whole lot of a pushback on the idea or on the film. I don't know. I think even when it was still illegal, the stoner comedy has been such a staple subgenre for so long with Cheech and Chong and Bill and Ted and all these different movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But I will say I did have to rewrite one scene because when I wrote the script, I wrote the script in 2019 and it was still illegal then. So I actually had a scene where the main character gets stopped by a cop and I had to rewrite that scene. So there's a scene in the movie where the main character is confronted by a park ranger and that scene was originally supposed to be a cop, but...
Oh,
so
okay.
That's the biggest effect legalization had on the movie.
And has the current writer strike in any way affected the distribution of this? And how will it be distributed? How are you?
Sure.
On streaming services?
To answer the first part of the question, we were obviously very low budget, so we were not at all in the realm of the what is it, the AMPTA, AMPT, the American Motion Picture Association. We're not a part of that at all. So like even for publicity appearances, our actresses can do podcasts and stuff without having to worry about
that's great.
Breaking the rules because we're under the indie waiver. So I work for a film festival, though. It's affecting us more there because we can't get some of the big talent out this year. But, so that was that's the answer to the strike question. And then what was the second part of the question you asked me?
I was wondering how you were, you know, how this was going to be distributed and,
right.
and to get out there to an audience.
Yeah, so we got a few offers from distributors when we were in the film festival circuit, and we ended up going with Lionheart Media, and so they're distributing us, and we're on a couple platforms now. We're on, like, most cable on demands you can find us on, like, Fios and Spectrum and Comcast. And then we're up on Vudu for rentals if you're using, like, a smart TV or something like that. And then we're going to be on Amazon soon.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
And then we have – yeah, so we're excited about that. So this is, like, the rental window. It's called a windowed release. So the rentals are up first. And then we move on to streaming, which will likely be Freevee and Tubi, but we're not 100% sure yet.
That is cool. And I'm glad you weren't impacted by, you know, in any way the strike, because I, outside of this podcast, my regular job is I'm the assistant news editor over at Micromedia Publications for Online.com, which, publishes seven different papers, including the Howell Times, which is in Monmouth County. And someone from Howell has produced an independent film, and we had done the interview, and his film was supposed to be released to some streaming services and things like that in July, and and then the week before the strike hit. So in his situation, he had to, and he was, you know, a star of the film and also, you know, produced it. And in this situation, he had to pull back and he can't distribute it until
that's a bummer.
He released it. So, yeah, it was heartbreaking because he was all excited and, you know, the story was going to coincide with the release and then everything got pulled back. So, you know, I'm glad that didn't happen.
We were very thankful that we didn't get impacted by that. That's terrible. So was that person in SAG or in WGA?
Yes. And he had gotten, and it's also Jersey centric because it was filmed in parts of Monmouth, but also North Jersey and also in New York. And he had some different investors and things like that. So I think, you know, it really threw things off to a great extent. And hopefully this strike for both the writers and the actors will come to some kind of settlement, but it doesn't look like any time soon.
Yeah, it still seems like it's going to be a few months at the least.
Yeah, you know. I love the date scene outside the cafe. Was there any
That's
particular, you know, thing that made, you know, example of something like that, you know, of a date that had gone so terribly wrong without wanting to put in too many spoilers?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or first date,
Yes. So when I was first writing the film, it was recently after I had gotten together with my now fiance. But before that, I was on some of the dating apps, and And I had a lot of friends on the dating apps too. And just hearing all the stories, you just kind of, it was just, I wanted to write some worst case scenario date scenes. Because I think in this day and age, dating be weird.
Yeah.
And so there, it's not a specific reference to any one date, but it is kind of an amalgamation of a few weird experiences that didn't involve time travel, but, you know.
Well, even the job interviews, you know, was amusing, you know, something. Yeah,
that's one of my favorite scenes, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you have a? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask if you yourself had any, favorite scenes of filming it. You know, like just were there times where you guys just, you know, were almost cracking up and couldn't finish a scene, or had some kind of amusing problem or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. So most amusing scene, our mutual friend, Stephen Lance, he helped us out. He helped us out with getting a music studio because we had one in mind. And then the COVID of it all at the time kind of stopped us from working at that location. And we were really scrambling. And I was kind of grasping at straws. I was like, oh, we need a music studio. And I had met Stephen briefly at a premiere for a pilot that I wrote that Stephen had done the sound design on. And we had only met the one time, though, so I was like, oh, this is going to be a real shot in the dark because I don't even know if he has his own studio. And reached out to Stephen, and lo and behold, he had a studio and was very generous with helping us out. And that scene ended up, or that whole sequence rather, ended up being probably my favorite sequence in the movie, and also the most laughs on set ever. It was a really good time. We moved slow because we were cracking up so much. Eventually, I'll put out a blooper reel.
I was going to ask about that if there was going to be a blooper reel in the works.
Absolutely, yeah. We actually have one now. We're just holding on to it, but we're going to put that out.
And I can imagine Stephen, you know, is naturally, you know, he's very interesting, and he would just bring out everyone's,
He's a hoot, and definitely a big morale boost on set.
Yes, and talking with Steve, it's never just 5 minutes. It's
yeah, there's always a story.
Yeah, yeah, and he sparks stories, and you know, for he and I, there's some recollections of mutual things, and we're like, oh. So, tell me a little bit about your prior work. You said you had done some work on pilots and things like that. I'm sure that's fascinating, even things that may not have gotten greenlit. You know, I'm sure there were some interesting times along the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the actors in the film are from Sketch Comedy Troupe that I was a part of for a long time. I guess we're still together. We just haven't made anything in a while, but... So that's called American Breakfast. You can find us on YouTube, American Breakfast Sketch Comedy. If you just search American Breakfast, you'll just get pancake videos. But if you search American Breakfast Sketch Comedy, you'll find some of our comedy videos. So we made quite a few videos, and we used to do some live shows as well. So that was one of the big things I did. The pilot that I worked with Stephen Lance on, although we were completely two different stages of production, so we didn't meet until the premiere, but that was a kids show called Arthur Futuro,
Oh, yes. Okay, yep. You told me about that.
Yep. So I was the writer of that one, and so that was a fun project as well. And still shopping that around as well. And then, a lot of the collaborators that I've helped me on this film, I've helped them on a lot of their films. I won't bore you with my whole production assistant and grip and grip resume, but I was working on a lot of TV shows in the city when I graduated college for a few years. That was trudging away there.
And where did you go to film school or college?
Oh, I went to Montclair State University.
Okay.
Yeah, loved the school, loved the film program. It was a smaller program. I think I had maybe 30 people in my graduating class from the film school. So everybody knows everybody. You know, I probably know like 4 years of the film school people from MSU, and a lot of them helped me out on this film, and still very close to a lot of them as well. I think all the producers on this film, yes, all five of us were MSU alumni.
Oh, that's great. I remember even back to my time looking at Montclair that they had, you know, at that time they had a pretty elaborate film, and I nearly went there. They had a pretty elaborate
they've had it going on for a while.
Program. Yeah. And I go back all the way towards the 90s, 80s rather. I wish it could say the 90s. I'm going to show you the decade off there. But, what are your, I know this is still getting off the ground, and I know you're still working on the other, I'm a pilot, but what would be your ultimate, goal to, going down the line?
Well, I want to make another film, another feature. I have another stoner comedy in mind. Multiple of the distributors that approached us about Marijuana Minutes told us, a part of the reason that they're approaching us, even though we have no famous actors in the film, is because it's a genre that is not heavily saturated. There's not a ton of stoner comedies coming out every year. So
yeah,
I thought, it worked with this one. We got distribution. Why don't I double down on this concept? And they're fun to write. So the next one that I'm starting, the tentative title is called Cannabis Cannibals. It's got a little bit of a horror spin to it. The main characters grow a weed that's so strong that when you smoke it, you eat everything in sight until you run out of everything and you start eating everyone in sight.
That's such a cool idea. I can't believe it hasn't happened before, but yeah, that's so cool.
There's an old trauma movie called Weed Zombies. But that one, I think, leans much more heavily into the horror of it all. Whereas this one would still very much be a comedy with just, a touch of horror. In my mind, they are not really zombie-like. They're still like stoner personalities, but they're just so hungry that they're going to eat everybody. So it's like if you got approached by a zombie, but instead of them going like, rawr, they're just like, oh, hey, man, can I just have a bite of your arm? Like really hungry.
If I may interrupt for a second, Bob, you have a call.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's bring on the mystery person here. Who could this possibly be?
Hello. Is anyone there?
Oh man.
I want to say, Ryan, you're such a good boy, and thank you so much. I love you more than life itself.
What's going on, Trevor's mom? Those of you who haven't seen the film yet, this is Stephen Lance, who plays a couple characters, but most notably the voice of Trevor's mom.
Yes, I was cracking up, but I...
Yeah, Trevor's mom has left the building. So.
Oh, no,
oh really? Already?
Yes.
That's, you know, I know he was going to do a cameo, but I didn't know it would be such a brief cameo.
It was a quick cameo.
Yeah, knowing Steve, you know.
Well, thank you, Steve, for popping on. And Steve does make one Star Trek reference in the film as well.
Yes. He was very proud of that.
It's very hard to hear because the other character, Clover, is cranking up the tunes. And there's some screaming. But if you caught it, it's his character, the man in the back seat of the car, vacation guy, mentions that he's going to a Star Trek convention in Jakarta.
Yeah. And Steve was very happy of the nod that was given to Forbidden Planet with the poster in the room.
Oh yeah, I guess you can probably tell from the film, but we paid homage to a lot of other scrappy indie filmmakers: Forbidden Planet, Night of the Living Dead, Clerks.
Yep.
There's a lot of little references to other. What was that?
The blue tint version. The blue tint version of
the blue
Night
tint
of the
version.
Dead.
Yes. Yep. Now it's more green.
Well, what are some of your own favorite, sci-fi films that you kind of look at and say, well, you know, we could twist this around and make this a little bit of a comedy, or maybe the other way around with comedies that, you know, what are some of the genres? Obviously, sci-fi and horror are genres that you enjoy.
Yes, yeah, so... no matter what I write, it always ends up being a comedy of some sort. If I write a drama, it's not a drama anymore. If I write a horror movie, it's more funny than it is horrifying. And if I write a sci-fi movie, it just ends up being a comedy with a pinch of sci-fi like this one. But I think it's really fun to mess around with having different kind of backgrounds, like a backdrop to the comedy,
mm-hmm.
So giving it a little extra flavor. I don't know, sci-fi gives you a lot of room to experiment with your characters. The main character, I wrote the main two leads in a sketch, and there was no sci-fi in it at all, and I was thinking, like, oh my gosh, what if this lazy, somewhat selfish character got a superpower? What would they use it for, right? They wouldn't use it to save people. They wouldn't use it for anything practical. So that was a part of the inception of the plot device there.
Yeah. I could see that.
But
I bet you could come up with a superhero, you know, go into that direction too, like a whole superhero stoner movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That'd be fun too. That'd be fun. Weed man.
Weed man. who would be some of the people that you would, you know, you would have like an unlimited budget or just had the opportunity, who are some people you would love to work with, either, you know, or as far as producers or have actors work, you know, of that
sure.
sort? You know?
One of my favorite writers of comedy that's still working today, who I would also love to have as an actor in a film, is Seth Rogen. I love Seth Rogen. I think he's a brilliant writer and a really fun performer. For the Cannabis Cannibals movie, I have one character who I cannot picture as anyone else other than Danny McBride. So I'm going to have to start to picture that character as someone else because I don't think I'll be able to get Danny McBride. We had the pleasure of meeting Kevin Smith at his film festival. Our movie played at Kevin Smith.
Yeah, I was going to say fest. Kevin Smith would seem like a natural.
Yeah. So I think our genres are very similar and our tones are similar. And he's also just the nicest guy. Like he was an incredibly open and gracious guy at the festival. Talked to everybody. There was no kind of ego at all. So yeah, I would say those are, and of course Cheech and Chong. Why not? They're still kicking.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
they can
right.
be in my next movie.
And some of the festivals. I mean, how many festivals will this film make to it, and how many have already been included? Has the movie already been?
So yeah. So right now, because we are now public and we're on, we're on cable and we're on. Some of the streaming services, we can't do any more festivals. Most festivals won't accept submissions if they're already available to the public. So we kind of wrapped up our festival run.
Okay.
I think we did 19 or 20 festivals.
That's great.
Yeah, it was a great run. We traveled for some. We had one in Cleveland. We had one in Michigan, in Bay City. That was one of our favorite ones. The people there were awesome. I think on the East Coast, we're a little art saturated at points. So, some of the New York festivals, you would get a little crowd, but not a huge crowd. But in Bay City, there's one film festival a year. So everybody comes out for it. So, we were in a huge theater with a big crowd. It was a lot of fun.
And how many of you came out for it? Was it, some of the cast as well, or, some of the production and writers, or a combination of those above, or depending on which
one? So for that
one?
Yeah. So most festivals, we had at least two or three people that would go to them. I tried to go to most of them. My producers, Justin and Nick, came to a large majority of them, and our two lead actresses, Becca and Sophia, they both came out to a lot. And then our other lead actor, Jared, he came to a ton of them. So it was a lot of fun. We kind of felt like a traveling circus for a little bit. and it was a blast.
So the members of your cast, are they involved with some other projects now? Or, would they be available if you decided to use some of the same characters in your follow-up, or I don't know if you want to your own cannabis universe of comedy.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I was saying before, I've worked on a ton of films, especially when you're in college and you're kind of still figuring out how to make a movie, and you're casting other students. And when you work with actors and it just clicks and they get your vision and there's no egos, like everyone that worked on this film, I got along with really well. There was a lot of collaboration, a lot of creative collaboration going on. So I would work with anyone from the film again. And yeah, I'm specifically writing roles for the leads to be in the next one as well.
And I could see them growing as performers.
And Becca and Sophia, they're in another feature together as well. I forget the name now, off the top of my head, but they have something coming out, I think later this year. But yeah, so they're always working. I mean, I feel like Sophia is in half of the shorts at Garden State Film Festival every year, so she's always working on something.
Huh. Now, you said you were doing some of the planning, if not some of the filming, in 2019 before the pandemic. How did the pandemic impact, you know, just doing what you do, even if it's not particularly for this film, but, you know, it must have obviously thrown a big monkey wrench in, as it did with all kind of performers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I wrote the script in 2019, and then in 2020, in January, that was when I did a read with a writer's group, and I said, I think I'm ready to start filming this. And then we had our first day on March 12th, 2020, and we had our second day many months later.
Yeah. So. Oh, my gosh. I remember, you know, the infamous March, the month of March in 2020.
Yep. It was very, and it was like right on that cusp. It was the 12th, and I think it was the 15th that everything shut down. And, yeah, it was weird on set that day, too. Those scenes made it in the movie, though. That's all the basement scenes we shot that day. But yeah, it was not till the end of June that we shot scene number two. I rewrote a lot of scenes as well. I rewrote scenes to take place outside that originally were in different locations. We had to trim down on the crew that we thought we would originally have. So we shot that summer. And it was a little rough to make it happen, but it was also it's gonna sound kind of selfish, but it was also kind of a weird blessing to have this creative and fun thing to do in a time when there was nothing else going on. So the film crew and cast was kind of our little pod, and We had no COVID on set. Yeah, and besides the actors, you know, we masked up and followed all the rules. But yeah, it was nice to have something, because we were filming mostly on weekends, and it was nice to have something to kind of look forward to each week, and be
so positive. Yes, that was such a depressing time.
It felt so dystopian, and yes,
I actually envy you for having something like that. That was also, you know, it wasn't a heavy drama or a horror or anything like that. It was something that would make you laugh. So that was great on top of it.
Yeah, it was very fun and, yeah, good outlet. So we shot 2020, and then we started post-production at the end of that year, and the edit, the color, the sound all took quite a while, especially because we were, you know, asking favors of people. So the post-production process took a while, and our first festival was a little over a year ago. So 2022 was our main festival run.
And what kind of feedback have you gotten from, you know, some of your colleagues, that are also producers and writers, since its completion?
It's been really awesome. It's been a really good experience overall. Everybody seems to like it. And even if it doesn't quite mesh with their sense of humor, everybody's really supportive, in that it feels very complete. You know, it has a very finished, some of my older family members say, and they only mean it in a good way, it feels like a real movie.
I was saying when I was watching it, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just, the way it was shot just, you know, was I felt very well done. It did feel like a real movie from, you know, even from the start, from the filming standpoint.
Thank you. Yeah, and that was something we focused really hard on too. And that's why post production took so long. You know, we wanted the good color correction. I think that's something that a lot of people probably can't tell you what a bad color grade is, but they can tell you when a movie doesn't look refined and finished, and that's usually one of the big problems. And then a good sound mix as well. We had a good friend of mine, Andrew Wojnarowski, did our sound mix, and I think that's another often overlooked thing by indie filmmakers, and it's another thing that doesn't always get the attention it deserves, right? It kind of like a good sound mix goes unnoticed, but a bad one goes very noticed. So
yeah,
they're one of the unsung heroes of the film world are the sound designers and sound mixers.
So would this film be able to get into some at some colleges, perhaps, as far as, I don't know, I remember we used to have, well, I don't know how the contracts work, if that can be done, you know, while it's on streaming and all that, but I was just thinking how enjoyable it would be for, you know, a college audience to see it on a big screen, even in their own theater.
Yeah, it's we did a screening at MSU. They had us back there to do a screening for the current film students and kind of talk about how we got this film done. So that was really fun. We might do I teach screenwriting at Fairleigh Dickinson University. So we might do a screening there at some point. But yeah, I think back in the day there was more before the advent of streaming, when everyone had every movie they could ever imagine in front of them on their computer, there was more like that group public screenings that colleges would put on, and I'm not sure that's as much a thing anymore. I wish it was.
Yeah, now the industry has been changing so much and so fast, it must be hard to even keep up with the trends and the actual business of the operation. You know, I had mentioned about my story that I did before, and the gentleman that I interviewed, he was telling me some things about how people have these preconceived notions of how much money you make, but yet there's so many other aspects of it where it doesn't come, you know, where it's not really that much as you might think. And with streaming and all of this, when you first went into film school, did you ever see this kind of thing happening in the way it's unfolding now?
It's interesting because it changes so rapidly now. When I was in film school, one of the main things that you would try to do when you distributed a film was you would try to get on Netflix or get on Hulu. You try to get on a streaming service because they would pay a big lump sum up front and you'd make your money back off a cheap indie and you'd be good, right? You made money. You can pitching to investors to work on your next one. But as everyone started pitching to the streamers and it got oversaturated and there's so much content, they stopped paying those big upfront fees. And I think people overestimate how much you make off streamers. A lot of them, you make no money up front. Amazon can pay as low as two cents per streaming hour. So for an hour and a half movie, you get 3 cents every time someone watches it. And if you spent $50,000 on a movie, you know, that's millions, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people that need to watch it for you to make your money back.
Wow.
So strangely, now the places to go, you know, you still do the rentals and all that, but the place where a lot of indie filmmakers make their money now is off of AVOD platforms, so advertising-supported video on demand. So Tubi and Freevee are examples of that. Peacock, there's a lot of them out now. and you make money every time an ad plays during your movie. So it's weird that it's kind of come full circle. It started off, you were running from TV because it wasn't paying enough, and the ads weren't paying you enough, and you went to streamers, and now you're kind of going back to ad-supported.
Yeah, it's almost like it's going full circle. It's definitely more of a challenge these days than probably it ever was, even though there's so many different avenues to explore. But how did you go about getting some of the, you know, the score and music for the movie?
Sure. Yeah. So we had we approached a lot of local bands, a lot of smaller bands that we really liked, and we got lucky that a lot of them were really receptive to the film and were excited to have their music in the film. And then we had two musicians that really helped us out with scoring a lot of the other scenes that didn't really need like a song to drive it, but needed some music underneath. So Adam Agizi and Ethan Freya were our two main composers. They both did a ton of work on the film. Adam made two original songs for the film as well. So both of the montages, he made the songs and one of our lead actors wrote the lyrics for one of those songs.
And how long did that also take as far as production time? Because I know that's a little tricky too.
Yeah, the music was spread out over probably 6 months, but it also wasn't like that was the only thing we were working on at the time. So we're doing the music, but we were also still working on the color grade. We're also still working on the sound design. We still were doing some voiceover recording and then popping in the voiceover track. Like, there was a lot of other stuff going on during that chunk of time. But, yeah, it was a part of the post-process. And again, super thankful for all the volunteer help we got to make this thing. So it took a little bit to get there with the music, but it was a really fun process to go back and forth with the musicians.
Now, you said you were also teaching at Burley Dickinson for writing.
Yeah, I teach screenwriting at Fairleigh Dickinson, and I also work for the Montclair Film Festival, where I teach some filmmaking classes amongst a lot of other stuff that I do for them. I run some film clubs. It's a lot of fun.
What kind of, advice do you give your own students for the times that we're living in as far as, trying to pitch scripts and just some of the things that you've picked up from over the years?
Sure. Well, one thing I always tell them is no one's going to, unless you're really well connected, no one's just going to hand you a budget for your first film. So you're going to have to do it yourself. And there's never going to be a best time, right? There's never going to be a moment where everything is working and it's the perfect time to invest thousands of hours into making a feature film. So if there's never going to be a perfect time, you just got to do it. So as soon as you have a script that you feel passionate about, I tell them you got to try making it or make some shorts first. And when you finally have a short that you feel really proud of and everything went pretty much as planned, then take the next step up. But I think that's a big thing standing in filmmakers' ways is they feel like they have to wait for the perfect moment.
Right. Yeah.
And a film's never going to go perfectly. There's always going to be hurdles. There's always going to be problems. And you just have to jump in.
Mm-hmm. Now, had you done some shorts? You may have mentioned this before, but, earlier in your career?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a ton. And there's a ton that are, that only live on hard drives that I'll never show to the world. And that's another thing I tell my students too. I'm like, you're going to mess up. You're going to have films that come out terribly. And that's also completely okay. You learn from your mistakes. You grow as an artist. And you make another one. Tons of shorts. Some bad, some good.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your spending some time with me tonight and in tonight's segment. We're not quite over yet, but is there anything that we didn't cover that you feel that you want to express as far as, you know, promoting this film and or any advice that you'd like to give other filmmakers?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk a little bit on both of those. So, check out the film on Vudu or on demand. It should be on Amazon soon as well. And please leave us a review afterwards. The reviews really help push the film in the algorithm. The more reviews we have, the more it gets pushed. To any young filmmakers out there, just jump in. Try making a movie. There's never going to be a perfect moment. So try to find the time to make it happen yourself.
Has there been any recent films that you've seen, it doesn't even have to be in the comedy genre, that have particularly impressed you, with how they were put together, or the acting, or the director, or cinematography,
yeah,
or anything like that you've seen recently?
Yeah, absolutely. I see a ton of movies. I love watching movies. I saw the big ones this summer. I saw Barbie. I saw Oppenheimer. Those were really fun. But a movie that really stood out with me recently is a film appropriately called I Like Movies.
Oh.
And it's a film about a high school filmmaker who wants to go to NYU. NYU is his ultimate, holy grail accomplishment that he wants to nail. And he works at a place called Sequels, which is basically like a Blockbuster, and he's having trouble chasing his NYU dream. But it's very slice of lifey. It's very funny. I was just really, really impressed. It's a Canadian director. I forget her name. Chandler something, I believe. But it premiered at Toronto earlier this year, and it's really, really a fantastic movie. So if anyone's looking to watch a film, I don't think it's streaming yet because it's still in festivals, but if you're looking to check out a good film at a festival, see if they're playing I Like Movies. It had a lot of heart. Relatively easy to make me cry during a movie, but it did make me cry. That says something. Nice emotional film. really liked it.
Is there anything coming out, even from some of the festivals, even from some of the indie producers that you think will be the talk of the land, the landscape here in the future?
Sure. Yeah, we're getting into that kind of award season almost, right? In October, that's when the first chunk of the big award movies start coming out, and it just ramps up through November and December. I think the new Scorsese movie is going to really clean up during award season this year. Killers of the Flower Moon. That film looks fantastic. Alexander Payne has a new movie coming out called The Holdovers. I'm really looking forward to that one. Paul Giamatti plays a college professor, and he has a rich student who he's kind of picking on because he doesn't think this kid's trying enough. And then that kid ends up being one of only a few kids that has nowhere to go over the holidays and is stuck on campus with that professor. And it just seems like a nice feel-good movie that we don't get as much these days. So I'm excited for The Holdovers. I haven't seen the film Bottoms yet by the director who did Shiva Baby, so I'm excited to watch Bottoms. That looks like a fun comedy. Theater Camp is another one that came out this year. It's pretty great. Yeah, a lot of good films coming out that I'm excited for.
I'm glad we've got a lot on the forefront to watch out for, because it's been sounding kind of depressing with, you know, with the slowdown of everything because of the strikes. And
That'll be next year.
Call
me again next year at this time and there'll be nothing out. But
looking at the network schedules on just regular TV and seeing that it's all filled with reality TV and game shows, you know.
Yep, we're going to probably be stuck with that kind of stuff for a little while. I had a question for you real quick, though.
Sure.
Did you have a favorite scene in the film?
I enjoyed, as I said, the date scene. It just, you know, and just when they were going at the standoff scene, I loved it. And I liked how that was filmed, too, with all the eyes, you know, going, this is a Mexican standoff.
Yep.
I thought that
that's
was
what, that's my dad's
kind of a, yeah, I thought that was kind of an homage to, you know.
Good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, that was a fun one to film, too. That was one that we actually did have some problems with filming, just because we were shooting outside really late at night, because we had to do, you know, when you shoot a night scene, you have to start filming when it gets dark out, and we had a lot of shots to do, so we had two nights, and they were both going to be 10 to 12-hour nights outside from 8 p.m.-ish till 6 a.m.-ish, and those were some of the tougher shoot days, and we had a couple times where police officers swung by kind of wondering what was going on, but luckily we never got fully shut down.
Well, that was something I was going to ask you. How cooperative was the New Jersey, you know, isn't there like now incentives to film within New Jersey, and we have the new Netflix facility being built. I don't know how far along that's been, but, you know, with the incentives and everything, but I also know that there are some towns that require a permit and things like that.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're down to the last minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Down to the last minute. All good. I'll say really quick that it's very exciting. We got Netflix, we got Lionsgate coming to Newark, a lot of stuff happening in New Jersey. Very exciting.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Hercules. We enjoyed this segment and look forward to returning next month with a Halloween themed segment. So thanks again for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And thank you, and success with your movie.
Thank you so much.
Great success with
one.
Your movie, Ryan. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Hercules. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.